Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where this week I am joined by Chris Howard. Chris, you are a global executive leader in, I guess, life sciences and clinical research. But
Right.
I know that there's quite a bit more to you than that alone outside of work. So rather than me putting a title on you, how would you perhaps title yourself? Really, in terms of who you are, what you do.
It's a hard one. How do I just title myself? I'm a clinical operations executive, and I run clinical trials and departments who run clinical trials. Mm-hmm. So, Shell, that's how I would describe myself.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to title people when it's not a clear-cut thing, because you've been involved in quite a few things. So one question I always ask people when they come on the show, Chris, is how they got into this space. Was it something that, when you were young you wanted to do it for a particular reason, or chose this path, or did you fall into it? How did it come about? If I take you back through the years, I guess, to rack your brains on that one. How did it actually come about to start with?
Well, back in the day, this was not a career path. Clinical trials and running clinical trials and even project management in clinical trials was not an option. People kind of fell into it. And in fact, I got involved very early on in defining what is project management in biopharmaceutical space. And early on, set the criteria for what are the key competencies to get there. Before I got there, I'll tell you that story. So I has always been interested in my own performance, trying to get more out of myself for the least amount of effort so that I could go to all the sorority parties when I was in college. Very motivated, but it worked. And so I still wanted to get the straight A's. I wanted to be part of all of the honor societies. So I wanted to have it all.
Mm.
I found that I could have it all if I took care of myself. We now call it self-care. Mm. I had sleep. I was very careful about eating, whole foods, and what I put into my mouth had a direct impact into how well I could think. If I moved regularly, I was in the gym quite a bit, and I would run, at that point, just 5Ks and just try to get outside. And I found that the more I took care of myself with those three basic ingredients, then the better I was able to perform for the least amount of time, and I would still have time left over to go out with cute boys. So I said, there's something to be had in this. And that's how I started my career, was in employee wellness.
Yeah.
So I worked for Johnson & Johnson, and they were self-insured as being the global company that it is. And instead of buying an insurance company, they self-insured. And so they had this whole department set up to train its employees on how to do just that, take care of yourself so that you can bring more productivity to the company. And so I created, based on the research from University of Rhode Island, Prochaska, the stage change. And how do you motivate people to go from pre-contemplation to contemplation to preparation to action, and then to maintenance of these healthy behaviors?
Yeah.
Just about that time. So I was on the speaking circuit, and I did a lot of work with that and developed a name for myself. And just
when you
about
say
that,
speaking circuit, quickly, what do you mean by speaking circuit?
I would go to conferences. I would go to other J&J companies.
Right.
I traveled all around, at that time, the United States. Later, I did a lot of speaking around the world for the same concept. And just basically, pass the good word, right? This was new thinking at the time, and managed care was just being rolled out in about that time.
Yeah.
And so Johnson & Johnson had this epilepsy drug called Topamax. And one of the side effects of Topamax was weight loss.
Right.
Bad. And so the company went all in and said, you know what? We're going to see if we can't do some phase two and phase three clinical trials and get it indicated for a weight loss drug. But you can't do placebo-controlled trials in Europe because of the Declaration of Helsinki. And so, and otherwise, you're basically preventing issues, right? Obesity is prevention, and so therefore you have to have a massive sample size. So the J&J decided to give everybody my WellSteps coaching program, both the control and the treatment group. And then just the treatment group had both my WellStep coaching program as well as the intervention of Tokamaks.
Oh, very intriguing. What did it consist of? You got me intrigued.
Yeah, so it was the same thing. How do you eat right? How do you exercise? How do you make healthy choices? And it's very commonplace now, but back then there really wasn't this kind of very concise packaging, and there was 26 modules for the 26 weeks of the clinical trial. And then that package that I put together was translated into for 27 countries and 32 different languages. My favorite was looking at the Hebrew when everything was words. It was so cool. And then to see it translated in Korean and to see it translated in all of the different languages in India, it was just really kind of whet my appetite for this world of clinical research and how it can really just expand your horizons, not just in bringing cool drugs to market, but it's also just a way to kind of bring to life standard of care and how people live their lives, very unique to my own. And it started a trend, and I was hooked. Yeah.
You know what? You've got me thinking here. Maybe one of the first stupid things that I say on this show is, will you? It sounds like you were an Instagram influencer before Instagram existed, like putting plans out there, like all of the fitness gurus do now, you know, buy my plan and follow this wellness scheme. Is that
Yeah.
kind of what it was like, but without the whole Instagram and everything else?
And it was really before internet. So we're talking 98 to 2000 to 2001. And in fact, in 2001, that's when
So we weren't even
9/11.
smartphones then, were we? We were Nokia, whatever, 51, or I can't remember exactly which one it was, but yeah, we weren't even smartphones at that time.
The cool thing about this too, and an unexpected benefit, and I got the highest award in the company called the Chairman's Award, is an unintended consequence was that the study coordinators and the physicians both got into it too. So they were totally engaged. And so everybody participated in my WellSteps coaching program. And so it became the favorite study. So at the investigator site level, they have all these choices of how do they prioritize their time and where do they invest their time on which trials. And they always prioritized all trial because everybody was really in it. And then it became recruitment was easy. And we had such a 15% less than forecasted loss to follow-up rate because everybody was excited. It just kept everybody engaged. So yeah, it was a big first introduction into the
It
world of
sounds,
clinical.
I was going to say, it sounds it. So you were in at
Yeah.
J&J as a PM. Where did the clinical research life take you from there? Because I mean, that must have been one hell of an opening,
It was
to have that bit of a whirlwind, really. As I say, kind of you were an influencer before influencers existed and didn't even know it. Could you imagine the millions that you probably would have made off that these days? Oh, I lost your sound there, Chris. But yeah, for anyone tuning in, Chris was kind of saying, "I know, I know," and I'm glad that she didn't swear. But if she did, it was cut out, so we're good.
From there, the 9/11 came and risk benefit ratio it wasn't the right time. It wasn't, the right profile. It wasn't a smart move for Johnson & Johnson. So they ended up deciding not to move forward with the indication. The Max is still on the market now for migraines, interestingly.
Wow.
But we continued and we went into obesity or other endocrine, such as diabetes and blood pressure. And so we continued that work. And that brought me into GSK. And
Right.
then GSK, I launched into the small biotech. And then from the small biotech, I went into government research and then into the CRO world. So it just kind of launched. But at that time, the definition of project management and clinical operations, it was not defined. And so, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I worked with Drug Information Association, DIA, to come up with a biopharmaceutical certification to supplement the PMP, Project Management Professional certification. So the PMP at that time was very well known for building airplanes and building spaceships and nuclear disaster plan, whatever it was. Like, it was very much known in the military settings and large contract settings. It
Gotcha.
was, but we needed to apply that same rigor and discipline into research, particularly as patents laws were changing and
Gotcha.
the level of financial scrutiny was coming in for a good reason into the clinical trial space. And so the industry leaders and I worked together to create that certification and then to build a bunch of conferences to educate and standardize project management in the clinical operations space.
How did you? I'm just sitting here thinking, I mean, that's a great achievement. How did you get yourself into that position to have that opportunity? Because, as you say, if it was always something, in other industries and in the military, who was it who patted you on the back and said, "Hey, Chris, let's go and do this"? It's something that surely doesn't just drop in your lap. How did that come about?
No, and I'm so glad that you asked this question because I almost forgot about this story. I was at a DIA conference, and at that time, I knew about my Well Steps coaching program, and I knew about it in context of the clinical trials that I was doing with Johnson and Johnson. But when I started to launch into, expanding my career and really committing into clinical operations, I was a little bit of a fish out of water. I didn't know what I was really doing. And so desperately, I tried to educate myself by going to any offering of education. And I was hungry. I searched and I searched, and I wanted somebody to teach me how to do my job in project management. It didn't exist. And so at cocktail hour in one of these DIA conferences, I was talking to this very nice gentleman who happened to be the president of DIA. And I said, "Look, we
Did
need
you know
something."
that at the time? Did you know he was a president?
Well, I did. He's just another person, he's people. And I said, "Look, I'm desperate. I'm very practical. I need to be able to not only hear the information, but I need to practice it. I need to network with other people who are like me. And everything that's out there is some guy on a podium lecturing to me for 1 hour, and it's done. That's not teaching me how to do this." And he said, "Well, why don't you go develop it?" And I'm like, "Okay, I will." And so over that Christmas holiday, I cleared out my dining room table and I came up with the very first clinical project management course. It was a 3-day course that was offered to the industry. And I partnered to develop it. I partnered with other project management experts in other fields, and they helped me come up with the rigor, the project management rigor, but then I applied the biopharmaceutical
Spin
twist.
on it.
And the exercises, and how do you apply it? And here is a workbook, and we can do exercise on page 10 of the workbook, and people had something tangible that they could take with them. And that course was so successful. It brought me to teach this clinical project management course all over the world. I went to China 8 times. I went to Brazil. That was cool. I went to Mexico City. I went to Argentina. I presented to Big Pharma, to a cluster of independents and small biotechs. I spoke to the military. It took me all around the world. It was such a thrill to be able to meet all of these people and find that we're all struggling with the same thing. It was really cool.
So, I mean, that's a lot of travel, but I know in the industry that could potentially be done in months sometimes because you're very busy. It could be years. What sort of time frame are we looking at there?
Yeah, so gosh, let me think. It was, let's see, I started around 2003, 4, and then continued. Actually, I was invited to go to, shoot, I can't remember which country. It was in eastern part of Asia, and I was going to go to Fuji afterwards. That would have been cool. But then the COVID came, and so it was really, really big. And then it kind of became a once a year type of engagement. I probably taught that course and, updated it and gave better research, probably a good 15 years in parallel with working in normal work.
Pretty amazing. I mean, how did that feel going to all of those different countries? Were you kind of like, I can't believe that this has happened off the back of cocktail hour speaking to this guy?
Well, for me, I was just thinking, look, this is so cool. Somebody's paying for me to go all over the world. Like,
Jet
this is,
setter.
I got to do a lot of fun adventures. So I would, work and be at the conference and interact with everybody, which I love because I love people. But then I also would stay a couple of extra days on my own dime. And then I would go tour and see the world for free. And
Amazing.
so I was just really a bit of an adventure person. So yeah, that was my incentive.
Nice.
Like
And you say that that kind of you were doing that in parallel to work up until kind of COVID hit and then it slowed down. And I know at that time from checking out your LinkedIn profile, you were with not Covance, LabCorp. There's been a few changes of name for that organization. And there, by which time, so you'd started out as a kind of a PM, introducing a lot of things. And when you were at lab, what was where had you kind of got to at that point? Because I think you were fairly senior by this point. I mean, clearly a few people had backed you and you're sitting there jetting off everywhere thinking, oh, this is amazing. And it does sound it. What was the title or what was the general role for yourself by that point, Chris?
I've stayed as a project manager, a senior project manager for many years. And it was time for me to teach other people how to do it. I had already mastered the learning curve, and it was time for me to teach others how to, build the infrastructure that it takes to run a clinical trial in a way that fits the regulatory compliance as well as on time, on budget, and in compliance, right? And so I really have a lot of appreciation for Covance, and they really invested in me in my own personal development. And because of their investment, and they just gave me a challenge. And every time they gave me a challenge, I would rise up to it because I love challenges and I love puzzles. And the bigger the challenge and the more complex it is, the more fun I would have with it. And so they just kept giving me bigger and bigger assignments. My last assignment, my boss gave me this department, and it was a failing department, 40 employees, and the productivity was in the 60 percentile, and it really needed to be in the, high 90s, right? To justify. So one could argue that these 40 employees were having a bit of a vacation on the job. So they were enjoying life a little bit too nice. So party's
Mm.
over. But I really listen to what are their competencies, and then I listen to what are the needs that are occurring throughout the landscape of our department. And then I listen to the customers and what's going on in their world. And through that, the solution is where the overlap is. And namely, we had a lot of project managers and a lot of project directors who were leaving, and their chief complaint was, you're no longer growing. I get that. I was there too. They were caught up in all of these mundane exercises, and they could not lift up and see the risk of the clinical trial, and they couldn't really be strategic about how to navigate through this changing landscape, particularly for these long clinical trials that we run. At the time, the pathway into project management was the traditional pathway, but we even still see today. You are a CRA, and then you move into an in-house CRA, and then you move into a clinical trial leader, and then you come over into project management. But the flaw in that model is that when you go through clinical operations in the CTL route, you're really good at the monitoring aspect. But what about the leadership aspect, incorporating the project management principles of time, cost, scope, quality, and risk, right? It's just
Those
not.
points, Chris, I guess, because I obviously this is like the area that I recruit in a lot, and I get sometimes a lot of confusion between kind of a CTM and a CPM. So I think
Yes.
what you're just touching on there is, I guess, that difference about the cross-functional leadership side of things. What's, I mean, if you were to try and pin down, I guess, someone who's, grown and built teams like this, what's the difference between, I guess, the skill set you need on the monitoring CTM or CTL side of things to the PM and project management side of things?
Well, the clinical trial leader really goes deep, right? I mean, if you think about it, some of these trials have 10,000 patients or more, right? And so with it, there are 500 different investigator sites in 26 different countries or whatever the permutation thereof. And that's a lot of people to manage. And you have to make sure that you manage them in a way that is consistent so that you have, the clean data. You have to collect the data in a consistent way. And so you need to go out, you need to coordinate with that. You need to make sure everybody's trained. Is a huge world, right? But running a clinical trial, the project management to compare is broader than that. That is one component and is a huge component. But being this does not mean you're being that, right? So other part of the clinical trial is understanding the regulatory landscape. It is understanding the competitive landscape for the sponsor and how quickly do we need to have a publication or to bring it to market compared to the competitors. We need to be able to understand, how do the data come together and how are we telling a story through our tables, listings, and figures so that we can produce a clinical study report that is, again, telling this holistic journey of this compound through the phase one, the phase two, and the duplicate phase three that tells that regulatory story, all while understanding all of these risks that are happening. So it's a much broader point of view. And yes, that is a huge job coordinating these thousands and thousands and thousands of people in many, many different countries with all of the different permutations. But there's a whole nother world out there, and you have to understand both. So they're both really important jobs, but just because you're good at one does not mean you automatically.
Transfers admit, yeah. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Now, I guess one interesting piece there is, like, I guess you mentioned that the I guess the 60%, and then bring it where it should have been up in the 90s. I think a lot of people walking into that would have been tempted to go in all guns blazing and give the existing team a complete rocket up the backside. It seems that you didn't necessarily take that approach and almost went the other way. Now, thinking back to the top of the show here, where you said about getting the maximum out of something with the minimum effort in order
Yes.
to achieve what you want. Was
Yes.
that kind of that same strategy from your college or university days being applied later in life, I guess, like knowing that actually this is what how I'm going to get the best out of people with the minimum effort and probably a lot less stress than having to go in and scream and shout at everyone every day, right?
Well, yes and no. So I still love to kind of tap into people's greatness. And I truly believe, like deep down, I think that we as human beings are designed, it's part of our DNA. We want to contribute. We do. We want to be productive. We want to know that our efforts are being appreciated. And if you into that. And what is exciting for people, for me, it was, exercising and eating right and all the things, but that's just one part of it. It goes deeper than that when you're leading people and you're leading teams. And it becomes more about appreciating that the journey is unique for people. But if you can find that secret sauce and tap into it, then people lean in and they're so excited to come into work. As the time progressed, and what I ended up doing for this department is I ended up adding a ramp up directly into the project management space. So I added three levels into project management. And they were the project management apprenticeship. And so the project leaders were able to down delegate these mundane tasks, which were perfect learning opportunities for these young, hungry, I can't wait to learn type of thing. So it created this nice kind of throughput into it. And then we also took in and ramped up people from other parts of the business as well, so we could create a matrix environment and everybody can learn, but we need to learn the basic fundamentals before we jump into such an important role, the project management center universe.
Fair enough.
So when I did that, and kind of getting back into that earlier point, there were so many times, and there's always a fire. There's always a database clean that must be, clean before, Monday morning when the inspectors come in, right? They're the big push. And I would put it out to my team and I would say, hey, we've got this thing. And every single time these emergencies came up, I could recruit for volunteers. I needed five, I would get three every single time. And the reason is because people felt like the heroes, and they are the heroes, and I treated them like heroes, and they just felt good for contributing. And you can really tap into people's greatness when you can create an environment that's like that.
You can, although I have to say, I mean, it takes the mindset of the leader, aka yourself in this situation, in order to have that mindset themselves, in order for it to sometimes funnel down. I'd be
Yes.
interesting to know, because I mean, there seems to be a bit of a theme here of you picking up opportunities and running with them.
Yeah.
Where does this come from? Because, kind of clearly when you were even at college, it was like, I want to be doing well at this. I want to be getting straight A's, but I also want to be having the maximum amount of joy enjoyment. I also want to be doing it with the least amount, like everything is kind of to the ex like pushed to the extreme on all fronts. And I mean, clearly it's worked well for you, and that's why you've picked up these opportunities. You've traveled all of these different countries. You've built teams successfully, even when they weren't not necessarily failing, but certainly underperforming. Where does it come from? I mean, is it parents, peers, particular mentors, or do you have no idea?
I think we're an amalgam of all of our experiences, and I can think of, even at Johnson and Johnson, and I tell people I cut my teeth on Johnson and Johnson, and I had this most amazing leader, Pat Flynn, and I actually had the opportunity to be a keynote speaker for her company the other day, which was so cool.
Awesome.
And but she always believed in us, and she always had a she led with her heart, and she knew every person's story. When you talked to her, you felt heard, you felt seen in a way that no other leader has done that. And so I kind of started with that, like, kind of that's my impression of what leadership should be. And I think that that was a great influence for me. But I also have always had this kind of, like, I don't know, this thirst to push myself to the edge, push the problem to the edge. And I just have this deep belief that, and I don't want to be cliche, but I'm going to, like, there's everything is possible. It really is. And I love the big puzzles that need to be fixed, because usually when they are at their worst, that's when people are heightened. They are more open to doing things differently. They are more likely to invest resources. You get visibility at the platform level, which gets the engagement from the senior officers of the company. And then together we can work on this problem, and together we can succeed. And then you see that little line graph going up, and like, there's nothing more thrilling to see that little line graph going up,
There's something about it, isn't there? I don't know what it is. Can't help it.
Exactly.
I mean, this brings me very nicely on about, achieving whatever it is you want. Now, on that point, I know that kind of outside of work, you're a very active person. You've already spoke about kind of, eating healthy, going to the gym, keeping fit, etc. But it's a bit more than what I would class your average keep fitter. Because when you and I first connected, I was on your LinkedIn profile, as us recruiters do, scoping you out. And I saw that you had been on a sebabical doing the, I couldn't pronounce it the other day, still can't pronounce it, Appalachian or Appalachian Trail.
You got it. That's perfect.
Oh, win. There's a win. Put that on the board. So,
Yes.
Chris, tell me about this. I mean, this is going to be the selfish part of the show because I am just ridiculously interested in this. It's come at a right time in my life where I love getting out for walks and things like that. So is it a few thousand miles? Give us a quick overview of this. So you kind of were at LabCorp, you're absolutely killing it by the sound of things, and then decide to say a sabbatical. First of all, what was it that was like, how did that come about?
Describe that. What is the Appalachian Trail? And then I'll talk about how I got there.
Please,
So
please.
what the Appalachian Trail is, it is the world's longest continuous footpath. It is 2,200 miles. It is 500,000 feet of elevation gain, which is the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest 18 times.
18 times. Oh, see, I didn't know this. I told you that I need to get on YouTube and have a little bit more of this. So,
It starts in Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and it goes through 14 states on the east coast of the United States, and it ends smack dab in the middle of Maine. And you don't realize how big that state is until you have to hike it.
right.
And then you summit on Mount Katahdin, which is, it's 5,000 feet in elevation, 5,500, I think, to be exact, which isn't so high, but the technical, it becomes mountaineering. And so you're literally going, putting your hands to the cracks and pulling yourself up, and put your hand to the cracks and pulling yourself up. It's
Wow.
crazy.
I mean, that's certainly a different type of ladder. It's not a clear career ladder that you're climbing on that one. That is literally eking yourself up things.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. So over 2,000 miles, What, how long, again, we've talked about kind of duration on things in terms of, doing your PM program and, wheeling out the health and wellness scheme amongst the trials. How long was this endeavor? Because you've completed it, right? And also, what was there was you said something the other day about the announcing it, and you were like, holy shit, now I know I need to do it. What, tell me, remind me of that piece.
Okay, so it took me 5.5 months.
Right.
And when I announced it on LinkedIn, it was just a very innocuous announcement. Hey, I'm taking a self-funded sabbatical and I'm going to hike the Appalachian Trail. That's it. And it went viral and I got 2.4 million on it with something to the tune of like 30,000 likes and 5,000 comments. Like at first I try to answer everything. And after a while I was just overwhelmed. I was like, oh my God. And so now like it's out there in the universe and I had no choice. I better complete this thing because everybody's looking at me. I didn't get to answer your first question about how I got there. So maybe that real quick. So part of my exercise routine at this point is now including Ironman competitions, which
Wow.
is the long distance triathlon. And I got really competitive in the Ironman distance. I went to the World Championship. I was
Wow.
on the board for Ironman. I started a foundation to bring women into the sport. And I just really was all in the Ironman scene. And then I hurt my back. And suddenly I can't run anymore. And I can cycle, but I can really do it only with one leg. And then because all of this work is happening with just one leg, I ended up tearing my Achilles tendon. And it was just devastating for me. And my whole identity in
Wow.
that sport part of me was gone. And so that was about 2018, 2019 that I was struggling with this. And then 2020 came along
And so you had been
and
competing, well, world, like we're talking world championships level at Ironman. Wow. That takes, I mean, that takes some mental grit in itself. And I guess to have those injuries, okay, having performed at a good level of sport myself, it must, that is, that's a killer, right?
Devastating, devastating, absolutely devastating. And I just so, my whole social construct is based on doing workouts with friends. And, we would go on long runs together and we would celebrate my birthday by, swimming 6 miles in the pool. No kidding. 3 hours by the way. And then cycling 200 miles, on Skyline Drive in the Shenandoah Mountains. And, like that's just how I relate to the world. And suddenly it's gone. I can't do it anymore. And it was really devastating. So I tried to reinvent myself and throw myself into work. And that's about the time where I was creating, building up this department. And the rest of the story is I built it from 40 employees to 324 countries while saving the company $11.7 million in operating expenses. So it was like successful. We were singing a song. It was so cool. And during the war for talent, my attrition was only 12%. So people were like so loyal and so in it. And I built up my leadership team and I got to this place where I really wasn't needed anymore. I could really remove myself and my leadership team, they could take it. And about that time, LabCorp announced that it's going to spin off the drug development division
Gotcha,
and
yeah.
company, which is called Fortrea. And then there was one last straw that broke the camel's back, and I was diagnosed with melanoma. And that I had to take some time off to get that treated and get through all of that. And about that time, I was like, you know what? I gotta do something big. This is, it's the time is good. I'm not being disruptive. It gives my leadership team a chance to step in and step up. It's just a good time. And so I decided to go on this sabbatical to hike the Appalachian Trail, which is the 2,200 miles.
Wow, that is, yeah, an incredible journey. And I guess, yeah, I guess after, you know, competing at that high level, you kind of you need that fix, I guess, of something like that. How did you find it? You know, because it's a very different ball game, right? To, you know, Ironman. So what was it like? How did you deal with the challenges on that? Because it must have been completely different to what you were used to.
Yeah, and in fact, so different. And just kind of give, I mean, if you look at my house, right? I've got a crystal chandelier and I got the pretty flowers. And if you look at the rest of my house, we got lots of paint happening. And I'm a girl's girl, you know, and I'm, you know, I love it. I'm so feminine. And there has not been one day that I've ever been camping. Not one.
Oh, I bet that went down. What did you do when you turned up? Did they just look at you and be like, who's this person? Give you that, you know when you get the look.
My pearl earrings and my white tee, and I showed up, and I remember so well. There was this gangster group, rugged, and they were mountain men, and they had do-rags and long beards and fur clothes, and they were the real thing. And I
Yeah.
just my little pink earrings. I said,
They honestly must have thought, who is this person? Because as much as you say, don't book judge a book by its cover, people do, right?
yes, and they were so nice to me.
Amazing, amazing. So,
Out of your comfort zone.
yeah, 100%. Well, yeah, I mean, I just can't believe you did that. So you completed it all. How did it feel like, I guess, having completed it or going through it? How were you feeling going through it? Were you like, oh my God, why did I sign up for this? Or were you like, yes, I need to get it to the end here for the 2.5 million people that are probably going to find out about this on LinkedIn?
My trail is the world's largest obstacle course. If it's one thing, it's another, and then it's another, and it's another, and it just breaks you down on every level. So one day I'll have baseball size hail, literally this big,
Wow.
and then the next I'll have, you know, these jagged rocks, and you can't even walk in a straight line, and it twists your feet, and you get tendonitis in your feet, and you know these rocks literally poke through your foot. And then you run across snakes and bears, multiple of them. And then you're literally scaling mountains. And then, of course, you have floods and you have the fires from Canada coming down. And I had this terrible asthma exacerbation. The list of obstacles is long.
Wow.
And you're out there, and like, you know, about every 5 days you go into town. When you're in the middle states, you can go into town a lot more. But the bottom line is you are at your end. You become malnourished. You're just not getting enough protein. You're not getting in the right fruits and vegetables. Your body starts eating itself. You start getting tired. And you're literally, the trail pushes you to the edge, literally to the edge.
Where do you
Because
get your food? Like, where does that even come from? Like, because you can't pack enough in a rucksack to go 2,000 miles, can you? So,
No. But you get it in town. So depending on like where your next stop is, then there might be a grocery store or a
right,
gas station
yeah.
cars or ramen noodles, lots of ramen noodles. And my neighbors also were so amazing, and they shipped me packages. I had friends, sorority sisters who sent me packages. It was just really
I had
amazing.
to ask because for a second, Chris, I was thinking that you were going to tell me that you were like hunting and, you know, skinning and like dining out on animals or something like that. I wouldn't put it past you after hearing what I've heard with everything else. That's why I was like, should I was a bit worried to ask actually, but no, okay, that all makes sense.
No, thankfully, no. I ate processed foods.
Yes.
Yay.
Amazing. So look, that complete, it sounds like you've had a heck of kind of a career and just a general life in terms of, you know, Iron Man competitions at a world level, rising through the ranks as a farmer exec, doing the Appalachian Trail. What on earth is next, Chris? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. I really don't know. I'm very open. I think that's part of the world of exploration is, let's see. I do know that I want to get back into clinical research. I love it. I love the complexity. I love the science. I love the how clever these scientists are and how they come up with these amazing technology, and now with artificial intelligence and the genome sequencing and matching that together, that we are in a really cool time. It's so cool, and I want to be part of it, especially as I go up the escalator of time. I'm going to be a user of this stuff, so it's good for me. So yeah, I do see myself, but how, what does it look like? We'll find out. Is it going to be more of the same? Will I launch my own business? Will I work for a small company, a big, I honestly don't know, but I do know this. I know that I want to stay in clinical operations. I love it. I'm born for it. I'm born for time, cost, scope, quality, and risk. That's my thing. And I need a big challenge. I need something daunting that is intimidating, that keeps me hungry. And whatever that looks like, I think that's part of the adventure. And being uncomfortable, not knowing, is kind of an exciting place. It's scary, but it's exciting. And that's where I am right now.
Well, look, that'll be awesome to see where you end up next and see what you can add to this pretty incredible story of yours so far. But look, before I let you go, I normally end the show with a bit of a quick fire questions round, Chris. So you'll need to think on your feet a little bit here for these. So look, it's quite interesting about, what you were saying about how you navigated. Is it college or university for yourself? It's university for us in the UK.
Marks
Same thing.
University. Yeah.
Like, I was very much the same. I specifically chose certain modules knowing that maximum output for minimum input to get those
Yes.
grades. But look, in terms of advice wise, what is the one piece of advice you would perhaps give to your younger self?
Believe, just believe. It is all going to work out. It always does. And the reason why it always works out is because of who you are. People are survivors. We're smart. We figure things out. We love the challenge and we thrive in challenges. And whenever there's a crossroad, whenever there is something big that is daunting, just believe it will work out and just don't give up.
I like it. And then my
Yeah.
next question, not really talked about kind of any books, resources, or referenced anything on this podcast, but if you were to, share one particular book that's made a difference in your life or a resource, a podcast, or whatever it might be, what would you
Yeah.
recommend for people to go and pick up or watch?
It's my favorite book of all times.
Hmm.
And when I was redesigning my house and cleaning out and throwing things away and just keeping stuff that I love, I ended up with six copies of the same book. That's how much I love it. It's an old one. It's from business school. It's called Competing for the Future. And the authors are Hamel and Prahalad. And the premise of the book is, from a business point of view, but it's also a personal point of view, don't compete in today's space. It's here, right? So why would you focus on today when the world is progressing? So instead, look at the directions that different industries are progressing and do the trajectory and look at it out here. And where's the intersection of those industries and compete in that space over there? And that's how you keep yourself fresh. That's how you keep yourself engaged, and how you always stay on top is by competing for the future. And that's the theme for the book.
I like it. And look, we'll close things off then. Look, we've talked, I guess, quite a lot about your professional career, your background, but also, in terms of what you do as a hobby sport. I don't know how you want to title it, but outside of work, what is your favorite thing? Because as much as we all do a lot of work, it's great to work with people that, surround yourself like-minded individuals. What do you like to do to either relax or favorite thing outside of work, Chris, I guess?
My new challenge, and this is brand new, is I now that I know, because I still can't run and I still really can't cycle because of my back. That's for everybody. I can walk like a champ, honey. So I have opened up this whole new world of race walking. What's the
Oh,
one where you're walking really fast and your knees look like they're going
and you
backwards?
look really funny doing it.
You look like a complete idiot. It's and I'm like, I embrace it.
So, have you
So,
seen the world champions on that though? They can walk faster than most people can run.
yes, I know. It's so exciting. So I signed up for the Marine Corps Marathon, and now I'm coaching a half marathon training group with my old running club, and we're
Wow.
convinced to add a new race walk division. And I'm slowly but surely passing the word for race walking. Yay!
Amazing. Well, Chris, again, nothing really is going to surprise me now. If we connect and talk again in future, I don't think I'll be surprised if I say, "Oh, what have you been up to?" And you're like, "Oh, well, I'm now in the US team for walking." I'll be like, "Oh, okay, yeah. How's it going?" So look, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure connecting with you recently and having you on the show. Look, for anyone who wants to learn more about your trials and tribulations, etc., or reach out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of yourself? I know that you and I connected on LinkedIn. Is it LinkedIn? But
LinkedIn,
LinkedIn,
and
yeah.
I'm on it every day. So the trick is, Chris is a four-letter word. So it's CRIS and then Howard. Two male names, but I'm all girl. So you'll remember.
Amazing, Chris. As I say, absolute pleasure. Thanks again for being part of the Huxley Morton podcast.
You so much. It's been such a pleasure. Really an honor to be here.